It's Wednesday night.
Blog Talk Radio.
We're going to have a good time. We have a wonderful night for you tonight. I appreciate all of you for tuning in. As you know, we have our special guest tonight. I'm not going to waste a lot of time, but you know, we got to do what we do. We're going to have Dr. Ngimi. I spoke to him earlier. I hope he'll be coming on the line soon. I think I see his number. Yes, I do. I see his number. And he is with us in the queue. So I will be going to you in a few minutes, Dr. Ngimi. So just bear with me for a few minutes. So I give my shout out to everybody who's been doing diligent work out here. Everybody, let you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of encouragement that we never hear, even on our jobs. But for those of you who are trying diligently to make this information go out to the masses the best you can, we appreciate that. We appreciate that. Y'all do what y'all can do. Don't stress yourself out, but do what you can do. Reach one, teach one. It's always been the philosophy. We always don't go into the seven oracles of Maya because tonight's guest, I had the pleasure of meeting, and he is well known throughout the world for being conscious and bringing it to our people. But before we get conscious in here and bring it to that level, let me go through the seven principles of Maya, which we should all want to take and participate in. That's truth, justice, harmony, balance, reciprocity, order, and righteousness. These are the basic moral principles to any civilization. And I'm saying that because this brother is known for having translated one of the greatest books that has been printed called Civilization to Barbarism. And he did it with love because the person who wrote it was one of the most beloved individuals, Dr. Sheikh Diat. For those of you who don't know him, you will know him by the end of this show tonight. This brother put together what is called the Civilization of Barbarism, and he made it clear that he was a scientist, y'all. He did something that most people were not doing at the time. He was able to take the DNA samples and prove unequivocally that this was the DNA of a black people or Negroid people at the time he was talking. So that is what this individual did. And this individual who translated the book, I had the pleasure of meeting. And I'll get into that in a minute, how I had the pleasure of meeting. But for those of you, I thank all the family from Tampa, St. Pete, Lake Wales, Middle Florida, Southern Florida, Northern Florida, and those of you in Georgia, Akilah Neferet, for joining us. Those of you in Texas, New York, I appreciate y'all for tuning in tonight because y'all going to get a treat. Broadcast this, simulcast this to others after you. This is done. Send it out. Let other people know because you're going to learn not tonight. But this brother is not just about what's going on in the ancient time. He's about what's going on in modern day time because he is from that precious continent. But before we get started, I want everybody to know that there's a lot of news out there. Try to keep yourself focused because they're trying to get us off track, y'all. All this is going on. And our next show Monday, I think y'all better tune in because we're going to show you all the information about what's going on with that plane, what's going on with the L. Sharpton. How many of y'all didn't know he was with the FBI? He'd been with the FBI. That's why he's able to have a communist news network show called CNN. Okay, understand that. So without all that, we're going to go into the positive. I was able to receive this individual certificate of completion on this initiation. I'm going to read this because I was given this by this individual. It says, Assimilation and Barbarism, or Barbarism, Initiation of the Original Knowledge, Certificate of Completion. Of course, I went under the name that I always go by, Brother Dry Bones, and he says, and initiated into the original knowledge as requested to us by the ancestor, Sheikh Anti Diop, in Civilization of Barbarism. May this knowledge contribute to your kappa, which is the scarlet beetle, for those of you who are into the knowledge, which is the cranial area of your head, where Tahuti sits, of our people, instructed by Professor Dr. Lingui Ngimi, And he gave me this on October 21st, 2012. And I thank the person who allowed me to be able to be there. Her name was the beloved Miss Rose, Blossom and Rose. She just came from Africa. I don't want to give her too much, but she's very instrumental in the community and giving our people, especially the youth, because I did a couple works for her and teaching some of the youth at her center. And I had a wonderful time, and she was able to set this up. And we had a two-day seminar intensive, which means that we were studying 8 hours straight, if not longer, because it was segmented in segment where we eat and go right back at it. And this brother taught his self, and I appreciated it. And so I said, you know what? I have to do something about this. Now, again, what we're going to talk about to y'all is we're going to hit all facets of what's going on. Ancient times, because he already got the blueprint. For those of you listening, this brother got the blueprint. And then he was able to translate the blueprint and bring it to us in English. And then from there, he's dealing with the most, I play the music Evil, which I heard by the elements of the universe. Evil that is beseeching Africa, y'all. I mean, when I tell y'all it's beseeching Africa at a high level, it is a high level of wickedness that's entering to Africa, where they are killing indiscriminately all ages of people. All ages. They don't care. If y'all looked at the earlier, I put it on the line, I gave y'all email, look at the links, y'all will see what's going on, and this brother is a champion trying to get this knowledge out to us, because I'm just going to explain this clearly. We're in a catch-22, everybody. We're in a catch-22. Some of the latest technology that we are using is coming out of that most precious continent. And for those of you who are Bible thumpers, it's in Genesis chapter 2, where it names all of the minerals, beryllium, gold. It says encompasses the whole land of Ethiopia. This is what is there. It's like the avatar. So I'm not going to talk any longer. I want everybody to listen to this brother. I'm not even going to go any longer, because I know he's going to take us in to another dimension of knowledge. We have some great individuals on here. I'm going to bring him now. I'll make sure he's here with us. Let me get him on the line. Do I have you on line, brother? Dr. Ngimi? Professor Ngimi?
Yes, sir. I'm here, my brother.
Thank you, brother. I am very much appreciative of you taking the time out to come on our show tonight, because you have been on a litany of shows, including Tony Brown's Journal, you name it, ABC, CNN. You are out there doing the trench work, and you need some soldiers out here. You need some soldiers to help you, don't you?
Yes, sir, my brother, Dry Bones. We do need soldiers out there for our people, and you're one of them, so I'm very happy to be on your show, brother.
I appreciate it, man. Like I said before we get started, I want you to know we met again in a couple years ago, and I enjoyed it very much. I kept it going. For those of you who know about our website, drybonesconnection.com, you will see that we always had this on the website, because we know this is a very important. Tell me right now what your affiliation and what's going on, and let everybody know you are a professor. You are a scientist. Just tell people actually about yourself, so, you know, I can't even give it the accolades that you are in the right form, so you do it yourself.
Brother Dry Bones, I really am not really in a habit of doing that, and so I would just tell our people, your audience, that what you said is I think, enough already. As a brother who writes, anybody that, as you said, who buys civilization or barbarism, Sheikh Anta Diop's masterpiece, they will read a little bit about me or anybody else who just is on the internet. They can Google my name and they will see what I have done. But I have been very, very fortunate. to have come from the continent, grew up there, but I came to the United States to go to school. As I shared with the group that your group when we met in Florida in 2012, as I shared with you that when I came to America, I knew very little about the history, the true history of Africa. So I was fortunate to have come to America, to have studied, and then to have sat at the feet of great, great, great historians such as Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Ben Yohanan, Dr. Evan Van Sedema. Of course, Oshekanta Diop is from the continent. The book, his book I translated. Dr. Leonard Jeffries. And of course, doing the work with people like George G.M. James have done before, and also people like all the ancestors that have written before them, and they have left us all this work, such as the destruction of black civilization. Yes, our brother did in D.C.
Right.
So all of these things helped me really to not only understand the true history of our people, but to get the knowledge that was really proper, true knowledge about our history. But actually, I'd like to use what Oshekanta Diop says, that our history is the history of the universe, because without us, the earth will not exist. So therefore, on this earth where we are, African history is the foundation of knowledge and of human history. So any brothers or sisters who Google my name, and they will see the kind of work we have done. But I think the best thing that I enjoy is to teach and to commune with my people, as we are doing right now, Brother Drybone. So I'm sure that through you, our people are going to get knowledge, because without knowledge, the people perish. So I'm glad that you become an agent of knowledge, my brother.
That, and that's exactly what I tend to do, what we're trying to do tonight. Now, Sheikh Diop, for many of you who don't know, and that was Chancellor Williams, is the book he was talking about earlier. So if you have not gotten that, look that up, Chancellor Williams. These individuals that you had the pleasure of meeting and bestowed upon, you learned many precious jewels, as we call them. Sheikh Diop did some magnificent things. Give the people a little bit of knowledge of how he had to battle so hard to get this information out, that the mummies and all the artifacts that they were finding and doing DNA on, they had the DNA according at that time of Negroid. Tell them how he had to battle through all that at that point in time.
Well, yes, my brother. I mean, it's. As you know, we had to do from Friday to Sunday just to study one book. But for those who do not know, Oshekanta Diop, of course, is he's been called the greatest scholar of Africa during the last century. They just left because this brother went to study in Europe, where he battled the European scientists, the European scholars, in trying to prove to them that Africa does have a history, and that Africa is the cradle of humanity, that Africa is the cradle of civilization, and this is very important, and you have to know why. And he fought with them to demonstrate to them that the ancient Egyptians who built the pyramids were a black African people. And so that was the battle that he fought for many years, even that they didn't want to give him his PhD. He has to try it like three times, because every time he wrote a thesis, it was so controversial, and the Europeans were saying that, no, Africa doesn't have no civilization. No, Africa doesn't have a culture. No, African people do not know what philosophy is all about. So he battled them until the third time, when he was able to demolish his own professors to the point where they were so ashamed, because the place was packed up with audiences that came from all over Europe to go see this African, where they called them at that time Negro, this African Negro who was giving a hard time to European professors at the famous university in France called La Sorbonne. So much so that after he demolished his professors, they couldn't help but to give him his degree. But then they took their revenge on him, so that in the 1960s, when his country Senegal became independent, the first African president of that country was Leopold Sédar Senghor, a friend of Cheikh Anta Diop, who actually fought with him for his country to become independent. But after independence, the French got together with President Senghor to forbid Cheikh Anta Diop from teaching even one class in his country of Senegal. So until he died in 1986, this scholar, this man of knowledge, this African man, this man from Senegal could not even teach one class, even an elementary course, in his own country. So therefore...
That's amazing.
So they didn't want him to teach, because the knowledge that he had was so profound that they knew that if he could teach the Senegalese people, there would be a revolution of the mind and a different view of the world that would be coming from these Senegalese. So he never taught one class, but we in the United States are very, very thankful to Dr. John Henry Clark, who is now an ancestor, but who brought Cheikh Anta Diop to us in the United States. So thanks to Dr. John Henry Clark that we are able to read Cheikh Anta Diop's books. The first one, or the most general one, that I will advise anybody who hasn't discovered this man, is to get his book, African Origin of Civilization, Myth or Reality. African Origin of Civilization, Myth or Reality. So that's a book that is not so difficult to read. My book, Civilization or Barbarism, is a 400-page, actually, compendium of all the area of knowledge and the sciences that he put together as his masterpiece, which was the last book that he wrote. He wasn't going to write anymore, and he was going to get into politics to become president of his country, and that's when he died, and we suspect that they killed him. But so this is the man that we are talking about, Cheikh Anta Diop, my brother.
That's right. And many of you who do not know, who's been on the website for years, is Thomas Sankara. Also, he was killed by one of his own entourage, which was in his circle. So the French always had their hands in part of this. And many of y'all who know the teachings that we do, the French is part of the Grand Orient Lodge, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. And they have a lot of power in parts of Africa. That's why the book had to be translated, am I correct, from French to English. Is that correct? Okay, so
yes,
you guys, everybody, Right. All you who understand that knows that this is a colonialism still in effect. From the Berlin Treaty, they have still kept their bargain. I told you they do not stop when it comes to the beneficial factors of the European monarchy. Now, brother, when you started doing your endeavors, and it's a serious endeavor. I had the pleasure of being in that class. Many people like to know some of the early stages of how the races were able to come from being black in so many ways and transform into these other races of color. I remember you taught it briefly there. I mean, you didn't teach it briefly. You taught it for a while, but can you just teach on it? Because I got a few people asking that before. They wanted to know how that was able to be done in the ancient times.
Okay, brother. Well, yeah, as you know, we had a full class or a whole class on the origin of humanity. Sheikh Kanta Diop in the book Civilization of Barbarism has a table that we discussed in class that he called the chronological table of evolution of humanity from the black world, right? And according to this chronological table, from an anthropological standpoint, meaning that studying the culture and the humans, Diop says that for about 150,000 years, meaning that if you can go from 130,000 before Christ to about 35,000 before Christ, there were only black people on the face of the earth. That means that there was no other race on the face of the earth. So, and then at 35 BC, and that's when we have the ancestor of the white race, who was what is called the Grimaldi black man, who was caught up in the ice age in Europe, in the caves of Europe. So out of the Grimaldi man who enters the caves in Europe, comes out the Europeans, with the what you call the melanin, losing the high percentage of the melanin because of the ice age under ice, and this now we teach this now in genetics and biology, how you can lose the melanin or how you can go from the black race to acquire all the races that you have on the face of the earth. So the Grimaldi man, according to Sheikh Anta Diop, then in 35,000 BC gives us the white man out of the ice age in Europe. And then as the planet begins to warm going from the Mediterranean, pushing back to the north, then the Caucasian or the white man comes into the latitude around the Mediterranean to meet with the black people. And out of the white man and the black man, about 15,000 BC, and that's when we get what is called, Diop calls the chancelade man out of southern of France. This is the prototype of the what you call the yellow race. So therefore, you have the differentiation of the races that come later, beginning at 35,000 BC and then 15,000 BC, and that's when we get the ancestors of the yellow race. So therefore, before these two other races appear, the African or the black man has occupied and lived throughout the whole earth. That's why you can see pyramids in South America, pyramids on the continent of the United States, in Asia, in Africa, and even they have some of the relics in Europe or in what you call Eurasia, because when you look on the map, Europe is not a continent isolated, but it's really mixed with Eurasia. So this is what Diop gives us, but as you remember, during the class when we studied this, we had to look at also the genetics, how this is happening yeah. even now, that we know that, that we can demonstrate that in biology, how you go from the black race to the white race. Therefore, we can, like, go back to the original race if you look at it genetically and mathematically. So this is what how I can sum it up for you, Brother Drybones.
That's right. And now, thank you for that beautiful summary. Based on what I've seen, what you have taught, it makes sense because we just had a brother a couple of weeks on, Professor David Himmeltep, and he pretty much is bonifying what you're saying. Well, so we're hearing that this is actually done with a lot of thinking involvement. And those of you who are listening, you can see that we are connecting you with some of the most profound minds out here to give you this information. So y'all, it behooves all of you to take this and write this down, because once people understand how much knowledge we are getting from the internet, there's no telling what can happen next, because this is the new age of enlightenment, y'all. So you got it firsthand with the brother saying. And I'm just going to give a few minutes so y'all understand how deep we're coming. This is not this brother here, and I know he said he don't like to give his own accolades, but I'm gonna just keep it going. We got him graduating from Louisiana State, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Columbia University in Manhattan, New York. He taught at College of New Rochelle in the Bronx, Malcolm King College in Manhattan. So we are talking about people who took their life and put it to use in giving us the information that, and a lot of times, like he mentioned earlier, George G.M. James, who wrote Stolen Legacy, these people have not been given the accolades that they deserve for even their lives being taken. So I hope y'all appreciate what y'all are hearing tonight, and then we're going to carry on because we got a lot of things to go through. I'd like to ask you a couple other questions. When the academic world actually realized that all this was true, what was the emotions that kept our intellectuals from submitting that type of knowledge back? Because once this type of knowledge had came out, it seemed like that should have been big for us to learn that we was here. How did you see in that time frame of that coming out and you doing what you do, why isn't it not accessible still in our communities to know that, hey, this is a very a profound race that we have here? Why do you think that's being suppressed?
Well, Brother Drybones, I'm just going to share with your audience what I shared with you and what I learned from Dr. John Henry Clark, our ancestor now. Dr. John Henry Clark used to teach that, and this is very profound. He used to say this. He said, a person who puts you in jail will not be foolish enough to take the key to the jail gate and give it to you.
Right.
Meaning that knowing that the Europeans and who have enslaved us and colonized us, they have miseducated us. Therefore, they will be foolish enough to take now the key to knowledge and give it to us for us to free ourselves from that imprisonment, that mind imprisonment. So that's why you see, as you said, this happens no matter how much knowledge is out there and no matter how much truth is out there that our people, our scholars have written and have put out. Actually, it has gotten to a point where, Brother Drybones, then you have also white scholars who now teach or write about the truth of the knowledge of the origin of civilization out of Africa. I had mentioned to you when we had our class in 2012 in Florida that there was this blonde-haired, blue-eyed PhD scholar from California who did this documentary called The Journey of Man. And this man was a geneticist who went all the way to the Kalahari Desert in South Africa in the bush, and who knelt down before the feet of this the bushman. These are brothers who live in a desert, you know, live there and live off of the desert, don't have no weapons, and they live off the ancestral knowledge. And these American white geneticists knelt at their feet and said, told them, I am from you. I come from you. And talking about the brothers from the Kalahari Desert. Now, remember that we Diop said that, you know, that's how the race differentiated out of Africa. So this geneticist went back and retraced the separation or the differentiation of the races from Africa genetically, went to Europe, where the black man became white, then went to the same area, we call it confluent zone between the Mediterranean, throughout the Mediterranean latitude between Europe and Africa, where the black man and the white man, and then the yellow race originated, and this geneticist went throughout India, throughout Asia, to the United States and Australia. So this knowledge, therefore, is there. But, Brother Drybones, unless somebody teaches it to you, you will not know it.
That's right.
Knowledge is there. The knowledge is in the books. The knowledge is all over the place. But without a teacher, people cannot find out about that knowledge. And that's why you see, I gave you the example of Sheikh Anta Diop, who was not allowed to teach one class in his own country. His own independent country that he fought for independence was not allowed to teach one class. That tells you how you maintain people in a coma state. That means that that in terms of the mind and in terms of the intellect, their own knowledge, they are dead. They are like dead. They are like zombies. They're in a coma. So that's, therefore you need teachers who have knowledge. You need people like you, Brother Drybones, who are beating the drum of our knowledge to our people that there's something more out there about us than what we see daily on TV or what our children get in schools and what or what you hear, you read in the paper. There's something more out there that is so valuable for us that can free our minds. So that's why you see this happening,
exactly.
Brother.
And you know, to go back upon what you just said, let's take it over to the East, onto the great continent, from which so much resources come from. We are starting to see, and many of us here in the West do not even know the severity of colonization, the colonies, and how they, King Leopold with the Congo, and many of us don't even know the relationship to Europe and how they were able to come in and usurp so much mineral wealth. And the reason why I say that, because when I talk to people from outside of being maybe of the black race, they will say, well, you people did this. You people gave them the power to do that. How do you take that upon being such a wealthy continent and we're not receiving the wealth that we should receive as being part owners of that land? Others are getting way much more. How do you see that as what? We have a leadership problem? Is there some type of leadership problem going on? Could you elaborate on that?
Yes, Brother Drybones. I think the easiest way to put it is that if people without proper leadership can never progress. Africa, even as we're speaking today, has a leadership crisis, because those who are leading Africa today, they are either, they have the European minds because they have been educated in European schools and universities that have taught them, have programmed them about Africa's, quote-unquote, Africa's backwardness or Africa's ignorance or Africa's lack of culture or lack of knowledge or lack of humanity, and therefore these leaders go back to Africa to treat their own people as if these were inferior people, and to treat those who come out of the European countries as being superior people. So in those conditions, Brother Drybones, nothing really can progress, to the point where you have Africans today killing other Africans, and sometimes within the same country, they are fighting and killing one another, and sometimes killing one another in the name of religions that were brought to them. They are killing one another. So therefore, Brother Drybones, in spite of the wealth that Africa has, the wealth that that actually is feeding the industries and the developments and the progress of all of the other continents, from Europe to Asia to the Americas, Russia and all over the place. In spite of that, African people are poor. African people are dying. African people are starving. African people are not developing because of that. So, and therefore, though we have the wealth, or the continent of Africa has the wealth, Brother Drybones, the wealth is going outside of Africa, and why the Africans are suffering, and their own leaders getting these crumbs that are being thrown to them by their outside masters, and therefore they feel like they big shots, or you know, in their own countries, because everybody else is poor, while they are, you know, driving around in foreign cars and living right. Better than the average African. Yeah. So this is the problem we have. We have the problem of leadership and the knowledge, my brother.
Yeah, and basically, I'm going to be honest with you, it's a two-fold situation, man. We're going to get in that later on at the top of the hour, because I want to get people in on this. You know, even here in this good old USA, we have a problem with identifying with the situation that's going on over there, even though many of us want to claim Africa as our origin. We really are disconnected from the pain that Africa is suffering at this moment, based on the fact that so many of us are suffering a different type of control based off the prison systems that they got going on here. My question is, how are we able to bridge that gap? Because I remember you said when you came over here, I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, they told you to, I think they said stay away from us. Is that what this, remember, I think you told that story. Maybe somebody else told me that one. Well, when they came over here from Africa, they advised them to stay away from Black America because we were no good, you know. And so I think that division was placed in us both by the same person.
Yes.
To keep us,
yes,
keep us from connecting.
That's correct.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, Brother Drybones, and I was saying that's correct. Yeah, I told you that's right. I lived that. I went through that in Louisiana, and of course I was fortunate that I came from a family that had knowledge about ancient history and about the fact that our people were stolen and taken to other lands. So I had come over here with the desire, I mean with the hunger to meet and to be with my people. So when they told me that, of course, I dumped that that family that were advising me to stay away from my people. But as I told you, many, probably millions of Africans who come here, and they are given that advice, and they believe that, and of course, they stay away from our people here. So that's what you call divide and conquer. Everywhere I've shared that story, I have met brothers and sisters who were born here, African Americans, who told me, shared with me the same story, that they were told to stay away from those of us who are coming from the continent, because the fact that they would say that we don't like them. So they plant a story in our brains, they plant a story to our brothers and sisters all over the place. So now we become suspicious of one another, and of course we stay away from each other. So, but that's one of the way, brother, to maintain control over a people. Yes, sir.
Yes, and I did a show, for those of you who don't know, a couple weeks back called Scientific Management. And these scientists, which you are definitely in the field of science, science is a very profound learning system, but they look at everything that programs all facets of life. I would like for you to give me, what do you think of the progression of where science is going based off what you haven't seen? Because we are very technological people with so many advancements, but it seems to be in the opposite direction. How would you perceive technology today?
Well, my brother, I'll put it this way, because, you know, every area of knowledge, there is a spiritual side to it. As you know, I shared with you that technology was invented in Africa by African people, just like civilization, just like humanity began there. So, but there was a spiritual side to technology. Unfortunately, in the world today, where technology is being advanced and taken forward outside of Africa, in European or in white-led countries, the spiritual aspect of technology is not being taken into account, is neglected. And therefore, the two forces in the universe, the force of good and the force of evil, are competing to see where does science and technology lead to. Of course, any scientific or technological advancement that destroys life is no good for humanity. And any technological advance or scientific advancement that helps life, that builds life, that maintains life, that sustains life, that is the kind of scientific advancement and technological advancement that humanity needs. So these two forces are competing today to see where we're going to take science and technology. Unfortunately, in the land where these things are happening, very few things are being done and continue to be done to sustain and to maintain life, whereas we're creating and inventing more things that can destroy life in massive amount. So we are at the crossroads, Brother Drybones. We are at the crossroads of technological advancement. Unfortunately for Africa, that the raw materials for all these knowledge and technology is coming from out of the continent. I know that you said we're going to talk about the Congo and
resources.
There, so we'll touch that on that when we get there. But to answer your question, yes, sir, we are at the crossroads right now, and so unless humanity becomes more spiritual minded, looking at what we are creating, then we're going to lead ourselves to close to the destruction of all human life on Earth, Brother Drybones.
Yes, and before we go, because we are going into that area of, because we want to talk about the Congo and also Rwanda and different areas that you have touched on and the book you wrote about and some of the leaders that we have mistook as helpers have now become traitors. But before we go into that, some of the questions I'm seeing on the board is, how did Kemet, which goes all the way down to the Nile, which is all the way down to the into the middle part of Africa, to Mali, Timbuktu, how did we lose those most precious jewels of information that was universities in the ancient world and even to the middle times of the 1600s? How did we lose all that is one of the questions that most people are asking, because for us to be so advanced, when did it all come to an end?
Well, Brother Drybones, remember during the class we had a long discussion about that, because that's a question that always comes up. That question always comes up because, yes, so we had all this knowledge. You know, we had all this knowledge. How did it all end? How did it all get, did we lose all of it?
Exactly.
Chancellor Williams, in his book, The Destruction of Black Civilization, he said that we, black people, we needed a mind revolution. He said we needed a mind revolution. In other words, we needed our mind to be restructured so that we can regain the knowledge, because this question that is posed, and that as I mentioned, the class I gave, we had a long discussion on that, is that it's a fundamental question that needs to be studied deeply and into the details, so that we can learn to not only change our state, the state of affairs for our people and ourselves, but also we can learn to keep that which we achieve and that which we have, so that we never give it away. From when you study the history of ancient Egypt, got to remember that until 639 A.D., until the Arabs invaded Egypt during the spread of Islam, and these Arabs are now occupying Egypt. So when you hear about Egyptians today, those Arabs that you see who are calling themselves Egyptians are not the original Egyptians. But until they invaded Egypt, so in other words, for thousands of years, Africa was the center of knowledge. That means that if you wanted to get knowledge, no matter where, what part of the world you were, you went to Africa. That includes the Asians, that includes the Greeks, that includes the Romans, that includes every race on the face of the earth, everywhere in the world, went to Egypt, went to Africa. Now, until the decline is going to be to begin with the 18th Egyptian dynasty. 18th Egyptian dynasty around 1400 BC, 1500 BC, during the time of Thutmose the third, and then with Thutmose the fourth, and then Akhenaten, Amenophis the fourth or Akhenaten. So that when we Africans ruled the world, where we educated everybody, but we maintained the power that we had over the other groups of people that we did not enslave as they have done to us, but we educated, hoping that if everybody gets the knowledge, therefore we can live in peace. Until I'm an officer fourth who changed the father of Akhenaten, who changed the relationship between the ancient Egyptians world that had conquered all these nations all over the place, the 110 states Thutmose the Third conquered. Then his great grandchild is going to stop maintaining the power and the control that ancient Egyptians throughout history had maintained. So now he allowed these hordes, as Diop calls them, from outside to come to Egypt. Now he started treating them like, okay, we are brothers and sisters, and we don't have to fear them, and we don't need to defend, to prepare our defenses. We don't need a strong army. Let us just live in brotherly love with these people that, you know, tried to invade us before. And, of course, when you do that, pretty soon they come back and invade you. So these invasions started coming to Africa, and finally Africa lost the power because, see, unless you know how to defend yourself, human relationships, especially in ancient times, was based on invasion and war and conquests. So therefore, they started conquering ancient Egypt, and we started losing that. And as a consequence, by the way, most of the black people who lived and built ancient Egypt, some of them started running away, going west to West Africa and going south to the middle of Africa and going east, where East Egypt is on the east side, but going down on the eastern shore of Africa. So therefore, the invasion started then in the 18th dynasty. When the 19th dynasty came about during the time of the Ramses, the country could not really get back to its prominence, to the power that it had. And then you had the invasion of the Greeks with Ptolemaic Egypt, where the Greeks moved the capital of their empire from Europe to Africa. And then they started ruling like as if they were pharaohs. So now you had the Greeks who would be, they would put their own pictures and images as if they were pharaohs in Egypt. And then, of course, after the Greeks, then you had the Romans. And so Africa has never really recuperated from that. And the last blow was when the Arabs invaded in 639 A.D., and the Arabs are until now in Egypt. So the lesson is that you have to maintain control and power, and you do not let other people invade you. You have to have a kind of defenses that keeps you safe from any outside influence and power. Because you know what happens? Every time people invade you and they take over, the first thing they do is to change the images. So they start to presenting you the images of themselves as your masters. And after a few generations, knowledge is lost. Sheikh Anta Diop was warning in his book that these ancient Egyptians who built the pyramids, today, they don't even refer to themselves as Egyptians. They refer to themselves as Nubians, because they were pushed. To the south of ancient, or to the south of Egypt, where they live today, and they don't even have no say so in what's happening in Egypt. Why? Because they've lost the knowledge. Because everybody who's invaded them tried to clean up the memory of the knowledge of themselves. So these are the kind of risks, Brother Drybones, that happen as a consequence of losing your independence, losing your liberty, losing your self-knowledge. Therefore, you become somebody who even forget your history. Dr. John Henry Clark used to say, you know, when I would go see him in Harlem at he had a brownstone on 137th Street, that, you know, history is a map. History is a map. That map, people look on that map to see who they were, and look at that map to see where they are now, who they are right now, and use that map to construct the future as to where they want to go. So unless we have that, unless we have that, Brother Dry Bones, unless we get back to that knowledge, we understand, and then we use it to teach our children, our brothers and sisters, ourselves, Brother Dry Bones, is going to be a long time before we really get back to even knowing who we are.
Yeah, and that's a serious statement. Let me read this from Shay Diop's book and of the study guide. I hope all you guys, sisters and brothers listening, get the book, Civilization of Barbarism, and you will see just a web of beautiful knowledge. I'm just going to read something that many of you have been hearing about, this cultural identity. Shay Diop says, define cultural identity of a people as being collective personality of that people. In other words, identity equals personality. A people's culture identifies then is what can be demonstrated to be the personality of a group of people when looked at collectively. And people, I'm going to tell y'all something. We are looked at all over the world. They are taking parts of our identity and personality and has duplicated it what is called the rap culture. All over the earth, young people up until their 40s are duplicating groups of young blacks here in America, all over the world, into this new rap culture. You are being defined right now. And sometimes you got to ask that question, is that what we want to be defined as? Because sometimes things are created for us. And the reason why I say that, because this particular culture now is the me, I must have, quick get, and quick pleasure society. One of the things they have ushered to us, before we take a few calls, we're going to go into all the technology, our cell phones, our computers, our PlayStations, some of our TVs, are being taken from the ground. We had this conversation on a few shows. Nothing that you have as convenient is not taken from the earth. And we'll get into that in a few minutes. Dr. Ngimi, let me just get a few people. If you want to ask Brother Ngimi a question, we'll take maybe a few questions right now before we get into the next segment. Is that okay with you, Dr. Ngimi?
Yes, my brother, Dragons. I'm ready.
Okay, we're going to take a few. I see the lines are lighting up. Those of you, hit the number one. If you want to get on this conversation, you hit the number one and you will be able to get in here. I'm going to go to the first caller, 6789. You on the air. 6789. OE Dry
Bones. Hey, what's up, Dry Bones? What's going on? I'm loving this tonight. I got a question.
All right.
For the wonderful doctor right now. My question, doctor, is this. You said about going into the Egypt time in the last dynasty. What I wanted to know, a question I wanted to ask was Khufu responsible for the first immigration laws, or was it Thutmose III who allowed other races to come into Egypt like everything was good and like we love you? And the second question is that really our downfall, because we are such loving people that we don't really regard other people coming in as enemy to us? We want to help everybody because of that's how we are on the planet. As if I take it back to the pygmies, it's like we don't have malice inside of us. So we, you know, accept everybody to come in and think, and we're going to give them the knowledge and we're going to live happily ever after. And in the end, we end up being in the state that we're in right now. And I wanted to know, the first question was it Thutmose III or Khufu who know with the immigration laws.
All right, thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Go ahead, bro.
Well, thank you, my brother. Thutmose the Third. I think if you talk about the first immigration law, probably you can we can call it that way. And I'm going to try to expand a little bit on that because Thutmose the Third was the one who was the first person to create the system we call today post office. In the ancient history, in fact, it hasn't changed much until today. So he was the first person who invented what we call today post office system. He was the first person to create what we call today foreign affairs or service where you had ambassadors, representatives in different countries. He was the first one to create the system of putting military bases in different countries, actually, that he conquered because those countries wanted him to ensure their security. And so so therefore, movement between nations were regulated in a way that, like we do today, I think that's what you're calling the rules of movement between the people, or immigration laws, if we can call it that. So therefore, we can say Thutmose the Third. Khufu had, of course, expanded and conquered, but Thutmose the Third was the first one to actually put this, systematize the relationships and the connection between people and the people that they conquered. And then Thutmose the Third, then what he did was he selected children of the people that he had conquered, brought them to Egypt, educate them in their own languages, and then send them back to their countries. He was hoping that once those people studied and learned the elements of civilization, and then when they go home, they will not act as savages and try to invade Egypt or kill one another anymore. Now, the second part of your question in terms of us wanting, loving everybody is not really in a sense that you're saying it, because in that sense it means that we love everybody so much that we don't even want to defend ourselves, or we don't want to have defenses for ourselves. No, we, you see, black people, we have what is called a philosophy that is based on relationship and humanity between human beings. We do not, basically, we do not seek violence. We do not seek destruction. Right. Now, white folks, they were the opposite when they came out of the caves, because they had to be violent, even to struggle to live, to survive, being in that kind of climate, as they or they themselves have documented that. So, therefore, that attitude, though, does not or should not let us put our guards down. Now, this happens, as I was saying, not under Thutmose the Third, but under his great grandchild, Amenophis the Third, right? Under Amenophis the Third, and then under Amenophis the Fourth, or Akhenaten, that's when they completely neglected the defenses of the nation, of the empire. They didn't care no more about the soldiers, that the bases, the military bases, that and the conquest that the great-grandfather saw in a so marvelously and in a most distinguished manner, that had conquered and had built these systems of foreign affairs, of postal service, of military, and all of these. They neglected all of that. for them it was that, okay, all we want to do is the art. Let's sing, let's dance, let's eat and drink because tomorrow we die. Everybody's a brother, everybody's a sister. It doesn't matter what they did before, what they did to us before. So we just want to live in peace with everybody else. So, but this is not really, my brother, our nature, but a neglecting that which is fundamental to every, not every human being, but every living thing on the face of the earth. You know, even wild dogs, even any animal, even fish, even your own cat. You keep kicking that cat, and finally that cat is going to fight back. So, but that was us. That's why we got to learn from history. I'm glad you asked that question. We got to learn from history that being nice does not mean putting your guards down. Being nice does not mean letting people come in your house and rape your daughter and rape your wife and steal your stuff from your house, and then they go out and you're looking at them and say, oh, I still want to be your friend, you know? So, but that's a fundamental question that you ask because that's what got us in trouble in the first place. Thank you, brother.
Two more calls, and we're going to go to the next segment, which would be about the 21st century, what is happening to Africa and to us over here. Let me get another call in. 235, you're on here. 235, you're on the air. 716-5235, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Hello? To another caller.
Yes, yeah, hello? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead. Hello? Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, hotel. I would just like to ask the professor that the reason that the Nile runs backwards is that because of they're not showing us Africa that it actually supposed to be upside down. As one of my questions, and another one of my questions is that we didn't have a strong enough military, and at that time technology to ward off the invaders, and also three, the Adam and Eve story, we're talking about Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein, that in order to get to this planet, you have to come through the woman. And could you elaborate a little bit on the woman's role in antiquity, because her story been destroyed up under his story, and also the mystery has been distorted. That's all I have to say. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, brother, for your questions. Of course, probably many people don't understand what the brother is saying when he talk about Africa being presented upside down. And what he's talking about is that when you look on the map of the world, and actually I will advise those of you who are listening to me to acquire the map that is called Peter's Projection Map. Peter's, the name of Peter, apostrophe S, Peter's Projection Map, because these maps that you have are maps that show Africa very, very small, and whereby, in other words, the southern hemisphere very small, and the northern hemisphere where white folks live, they have blown it up hugely. So therefore, you don't see the normal or the relative sizes of the continent. So if you get a Peter's projection, and they actually even lessons you can give, or because that map also, they have lessons where you can understand why the maps were distorted. Now, what the brother's talking about, showing Africa upside down. When the ancient Egyptians, our ancestors, when they stood in Africa, in Egypt, they looked their faces south. And when you face the south, means that now when you look at the map, that means the map has to be reversed. Instead of the way we usually have it, you have to turn it around 180 degrees so that now the south of Africa looks up. And then the European, then is like Europe now is behind you. That's what the brother is talking about. Why? Because the reason why when they tell you that when you on a map or you're trying to look at the four cardinal points, you look, it has to be on your left, your west, on your right. The south has to be before you, and the north has to be behind you. And this is because the ancient Egyptians who invented the first maps that have been discovered that were so sophisticated that after them, the whole world went into dark ages, and they didn't know, they couldn't even draw the map, that the ancient Egyptians looked up south because they came from the south. They used to say, Dr. Ben Yochanan used to say this all the time, that they looked down south because they say, we came from the feet of the mountains of the moon where God happy dwells. Meaning that that's where humanity began. But not only that, because the Nile River is the only river on the face of the earth that starts south and flows down north. If you look at every river, look at every map of the United States, wherever Mississippi comes from the north, goes down south, most of the rivers. But the Nile is the only river on the face of the earth that originates in the south and flows down north. Therefore, for the ancient Egyptians, south was up. So that's why the brother's talking about turning the map upside down. This is one of the pieces of the knowledge, my brother, that we need to know, to teach, and to understand the meaning of what that is. Because unless you know that, you will not understand even some of the ancient history, because during those days, that's how everybody refers to the earth, according to what African people, black people in Egypt, wrote and taught them, because everybody got knowledge from them. Yes, a strong military is necessary. Strong military is necessary to maintain your defenses. And our people, it wasn't like we didn't have strong defenses, my brother. We have strong defenses. That's why Thutmose the Third conquered 110 states. That's why we were able to conquer everybody that we wanted to. Anybody who tried to invade us, we defeated them. If we didn't feed them, we would chase them out after a little while. But it was about neglecting the defenses that you have. You can have good military, you can have strong military, but unless you defend yourself or you maintain that army, you know, in tip-top shape, well, indeed, the next invasion when it comes along, you're going to lose. But what I was referring to, though, was that under Amenophis III and Amenophis IV, they not only neglected the army, but they just let it go. They didn't want to fight anymore. They didn't want to attack anybody anymore. They didn't want to defend themselves anymore. In other words, for them it was that we are all brothers. And the only thing they loved was the arts. The arts and religion and pleasure. So that's why we lost the attacks. And the story of Adam and Eve, of course, Adam and Eve comes out of the history of Asar and Oset, and I think you know that. So therefore, yeah, when you hear about Adam and Eve, it's just coming out of you, out of us, out of our culture, and of course, you know, they just
right.
use different names. And woman's role, the woman's role, my brother, that's something that is. Again, it's a whole lesson. Brother Drybones can tell you about that because we spend, I think, the whole morning talking about the woman's role in African society.
Yeah.
Because
that's right.
The ancient
sure
society, the ancient society of Africa is what is called matrilineal. Matrilineal, because the woman is the foundation of the family. And by the way, it's not in the sense of the European sense, or say anybody's sense or that she's superior or she's inferior or no. Because in African family, the matrilineal family, there was what is called the interrelationship between the man and the woman. While the woman or the mother was the foundation, the father was the pillar upon which the African family was to be right, to be erect, to be strong. Well, the mother was the nurturing, the foundation. And this actually, our ancestor showed this in mathematical form, in geometrical form. I don't know if you've heard of what is called the right angle triangle. The Greeks, when they stole it, they called it the Pythagorean theorem. It's a right angle triangle, where a triangle that the three sides with one angle being the right angle the right angle at 90 degrees, which is the perfect or the correct angle that triangle has. And that triangle shows that the base or the baseline or represented the mother. The side of the triangle represented the father. And then what was called, we call in geometry, the hypotenuse, meaning the line that goes from the tip of the right line to the tip of the bottom line, that represented the children. So therefore, the woman has a role to play that connects with the role of the man or the husband to give you the perfect relationship between mother, father, and the children. So this is how the woman is represented in African family. She nurtures the family. The family rests upon her, while the man is the protector, is the pillar that stands that on which the family leans. But it's something that not only goes, you can demonstrate mathematically, but also we can demonstrate in terms of culture, in terms of family or anthropology, also in terms of spiritual. But that's the role of the woman. It's a perfect role that matches with that of the man for you to get the perfect social system. Thank you, brother, for your questions.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, that when he said those angles and right angles and triangles, this is what they stole from us to create their Western European masonry that they have instructed the whole world on. Many of you who do not understand that, this is where they got it from. They have every instrument of masonry is in Kemet, and this is where they got it from. The first Hemotep broke the first Grand Lodge in Luxor. So those of you talking about 1717, you better do some more searching so you can find the real answer. We're going to the bottom of the hour now, and we're going to come up on the full hour in a little bit, but I want to ask everybody, and this is a catch-22. Some of you got G4 phones, some of you got iPhones, and you got Nokios, you got computers, you got PlayStations. This time, we're going to talk about Africa has always been the meal ticket for the West. When I mean meal ticket, it eats all its minerals, gold, silver, platinum, uranium. Nigeria has one of the biggest oil reservoirs, you name it. But this place called the Congo has a unique mineral called coltan. And this coltan is the driving force for the 21st century. And many of you, I know we say, hey, how can we live without it? Problem is, it's a technology that can be used for good, but unfortunately, it's being taken into an evil direction. and many people are losing lives. I'm going to have a professor talk about, because he is an advocate for this in the Congo, where his hometown, where he lives and was born at. They are using this as a killing ground. I think he said 5 million plus people have been murdered based on corporations, corporations have entered into Africa and have taken over huge amounts of land. Also, international people, China's there now. And we spoke last week how China is building a refinery in Saudi Arabia, but we know the U.S. Media is not talking about it. That's strange. Saudi Arabia is with China building a refinery. But they also are in Africa. You have Saudi Arabia, which is Africa, even though they try to say it's not. You have Libya, Morocco, for all you people who claim to be Moors, is in Africa. But African Moors, the Moors in Africa are not trying to help us for some strange reason. This brother is going to explain to you some of the dynamics that have destroyed many of the African infrastructure, including some of well-known individuals. You got Bill Clinton. You have our President Barack Obama, who has given many problems to Africa with AFRICOM, military base is there. Drone weaponry is there. Many people are now... I'm going to let you go now, and you explain from there what is being done and what is going on with this new revolution to take over Africa.
Thank you, Brother Dry Bones. I think you have given a good introduction. For the brothers and sisters listening on the radio, again, I would like for them to have just check a map. If you don't have one, just Google one, the map of Africa, and then look in the heart of Africa. That's where the Congo is. It's a country that occupies most of Central Africa. And when you look at the size of that country, you will not believe that that country of the Congo that is in the heart of Africa is as big as all of Western Europe. If you take all the Western European countries, from England to France to Germany, to all the countries in between, and Italy, you know, all of them, put them together. That's the size of the Congo. And that's number one. Number two, a good way of comparing Africa, for instance, to the United States, is that Africa, the Congo, in the Central Africa, the Congo is as big as all of the United States east of the Mississippi River. That means if you take the Mississippi River, then east of the Mississippi River, the entire United States east of the Mississippi River, that's how big the Congo is. And not only the size that matters, but they have estimated that the Congo has resources, mineral resources, and the oil and all the other resources that is worth, they have estimated, about $24 trillion, $24 trillion in the Congo. Now, another way of looking at it is this, is that the Congo has been called the richest piece of real estate on earth. The richest piece of real estate on earth. And if there's any mineral on earth, whatever they call it, the Congo has it. But what Brother Dry Bones was talking about is the revolution of the 21st century, as he was describing, calling this from cell phones to MP3s to all these gadgets to your computer to all of these things smaller that they're making them now, all of these electronics. There's one metal that they use that is the best conductor of energy, is a metal that Brother Dry Bones told you is called coltan, C-O-L-T-A-N. Now, this metal, 80% of the reserve on Earth, 80% is found in the Congo. Australia has a little bit, I think 11% or 12, and also Canada has some, but 80% of it is coming out of the Congo. In fact, there's so much of it in the Congo that the mines in Australia, for instance, they had to close the mines because the coltan was coming out of the Congo. They were getting it so cheap. How cheap? Think 8 million people dead since 1996. 8 million people have died since 1996. And you don't hear a peep out of any major media. You don't hear anything out of any government on the earth about the people dying in the Congo. Why? Because every country on earth that is trying to manufacture something is getting those minerals out of the Congo. And therefore, the entire earth, all these governments are keeping quiet. They're not saying anything. Now, how are they getting the minerals out of the Congo? Well, they invaded in 1996. We invaded. Three African countries invaded the Congo with the help of the United States government, the British government, the Belgian government, the French government, and the support of the mining companies. And in the United States at that time, of course, we had Bill Clinton was the president. So he's the one that helped Rwanda, Uganda, and Burundi invade the Congo in 1996. And since then, the guy who was president of Rwanda at the time, actually he had just taken over in Rwanda, Paul Kagame, then and with the guy who's the president in Uganda, Museveni, and they led these armies to invade the Congo. And what they did, they opened, therefore, the Congo's mining industries to all these people and mining companies that had helped them and funded them for them now to start getting the resources in the Congo. So they go in part of the eastern Congo, they kill the natives, and they take the children, use them to dig the mines, or they wipe out the population. They bring guys from people from Rwanda and Uganda to get the resources and take them out of the Congo, take them through Uganda and Rwanda over to the world. So there's no nation on earth that is not in the Congo that is benefiting from the Congo. And that's why you hear that everybody's keeping quiet and nobody's saying about it. But the atrocities, I mean, the killings, the way that they destroy people, the way they rape even little girls as young as 4 years old, and they mutilate people, especially women. It's been something that when you see the pictures, you know, you will be shocked. And so
right.
This has been going on in the Congo since 1996. So we have been struggling to get the world to take notice. My first book on the Congo came out in 2000. It's called Genocide in the Congo, in the name of Bill Clinton and of the Paris Club and of the mining conglomerate. This book came out. Some of you have heard of Brother Ilombe Brass, who passed now. He and I, we were all over the place, including the famous show Like It Is that was here in, out of New York, out of ABC News. So we've talked, we have sent information, and we are still fighting to end this Holocaust going out in the Congo. So That's in as a matter of introduction. I'll let Brother Dry Bones ask any questions, or some of you ask any questions in terms of who's doing what and what you'd like to know about it. But that's what's going on.
Yeah.
There's a follow-up going on in the Congo. 8 million people, over 8 million people have died. Over 2 million women and little girls have been gang raped, mutilated. Some of them burned alive. Some of them buried alive. And some of them just chopped and left out there. And this is happening because of the resources of the Congo, because Congo has all of these resources that the world wants. But none of them give a hoot about black lives. So therefore, they don't care about how many of us die. So I'm going to give it back to Dry Bones. I'm going to give it back to you.
And that's where we're going now. Many who are got your hands up, your lines up, we're going to make sure we get everybody in on this conversation. So make it brief. Ask them a question or a comment. Make it brief so we get more people on here. We're going to start right here. 8557.
Dustin, you get me. Thank you for joining us tonight, and it's a pleasure to have you here on the talk. My question is with regard to the rebel army leader, Laurent Nkunda. In your opinion, good or bad? Is he committing atrocities against his own people in the Congo, or is he trying to preserve the resources and the integrity of the Democratic Republic of Congo?
Thank you, brother,
for your question.
Thank you very much. I'm going to disappoint you first by telling you that Laurent Nkunda is not a Congolese. That's number one. He is a Rwandan Tutsi. Again, this is one of the schemes that the Europeans have come up with. What they do is they take Rwanda, because Rwanda is the one that is occupying Eastern Congo, and the only way that he can maintain hold of that Eastern Congo where they're getting the resources is that he gets together with the president of the Congo, and probably you may think that the person they call Joseph Kabila is also Congolese. And I'll disappoint you again to tell you that no, he is not. And I'll give you a little explanation. When Rwanda and Uganda and Burundi invaded the Congo in 1996, in 1998, they tried to take over the entire Congo. And until 2001, January 2001, they assassinated the Congolese that they had used as a front for them to invade the Congo by the name of Laurent Kabila. Then what they did was they took a son of one of Laurent Kabila's wives. Laurent Kabila was a Muslim. He had about 13 wives. One of his women is a Tutsi woman that was a wife to a friend of his that used to fight against Mobutu with him by the name of Kanambe. So this woman has had three children with that woman, the woman, the wife that Laurent Kabila took, the Tutsi woman, had three children with her husband who died. So therefore, Laurent Kabila took that woman and put her in his harem of the other 12 women. But the Tutsi son belonged to this woman had gone to Rwanda and joined the Rwandan army. And so when they invaded, after they killed Laurent Kabila, Paul Kagame and Museveni, they took over the government of the Congo, and they made this son, whose real name is Kanambe, Hippolyte Kanambe, they changed his name to Joseph Kabila as a cover name, because his mother was the concubine to Laurent Kabila. So they gave him a cover name of Joseph Kabila and imposed him on the Congolese as president.
And this guy has, since 2001, has killed thousands of the Congolese. In fact, the other children of Laurent Kabila, his biological children, some of them he has assassinated. The other ones live outside. So what does Joseph Kabila do as an agent of Rwanda for Kagame? He gets together with Paul Kagame to come up with a way to actually not only infiltrate all of the Congolese institutions with Rwandans, but also take Rwandan soldiers, mix them inside the Congolese army so that they can appear to be Congolese, quote-unquote, rebels, whereas they are working for Paul Kagame. Now, we have so much evidence about that, but my brother, I don't know if you heard that Paul Kagame assassinated one of his former friends who was the spy chief of the Rwandan of his Rwandan government, who had to run away and was in exile in South Africa. Paul Kagame sent agents to go and kill him. They just assassinated him. In fact, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the House in the United States wrote to the Obama government telling them to review and revise their policy with Rwanda instead of supporting Rwanda blindly, because Paul Kagame has been killing too many people, including his own people. Now, that guy who was killed, his name is Patrick Karegeya, the former chief of Rwandan Service of Information, like our CIA here. So that guy gave an interview to a French news media when they asked him about, I don't know, probably you heard about Bosco Ntaganda, who's now at the International Court. They used to call him the Terminator, and they used also to call him a rebel leader in the Congo. So this guy Karegeya told the French media, said, look, whether it is Laurent Nkunda, whether it is Bosco Ntaganda, whether it is Mutebushi, whether it is all the other leaders going back to even the guy they call Joseph Kabila, all these people Rwandan. They were in the Rwandan army. After they were formed, they were sent to the Congo for them to do the bidding of Paul Kagame. Why? Because Rwanda is so small, it cannot control the Congo. So it needs agents who infiltrate and then who carry out not only the killing, but to ensure that all the minerals are coming out of the Congo. So sorry to disappointed brother, but Laurent Nkunda, just like Bosco Ntaganda, just like Mutebushi, just like Makenga of the last so-called rebel group M23, all of these are Rwandan soldiers who, after being trained, they are sent to the Congo and they are given Congolese uniform. In fact, I have a cousin of mine who just came out of Kinshasa in the Congo, who just told me that even the soldiers who are guarding the installations of the national radio and television stations in Kinshasa, they are Rwandan soldiers. They are Rwandan soldiers.
And you know,
there for them to guard these places. So that's I wanted to give you that background so you know that the situation in the Congo is not what it looks. It seems to be that these are, you know, Rwandans controlling the institutions. Thank you.
And I work, and you know, Hollywood made that movie, but a good actor that many of us like.
You want to repeat that again? You are breaking. Hold on, let me move. Brother Dragon, hold on 1 second.
You're breaking up, Dorian.
Yes,
go ahead.
Brother, you're breaking up. We can't hear you. You're breaking up.
Okay. All right. Let me. I know that it happens sometimes. Look, they do this when we get too deep. The French is the main people I noticed in the giving of weapons.
French.
Just the French?
Brother, you see breaking up. You're saying that you're asking whether the French are the one giving the weapons to Rwanda?
Yes, correct.
No?
Correct.
That's incorrect. That's incorrect. Everybody okay. who's listening, I will advise you to go to YouTube and watch a video that is titled Crisis in the Congo, column, Uncovering the Truth. Crisis in the Congo, Uncovering the Truth. If you look at that video, actually, I think I appear in it, they interviewed me for it, but I appear on it at twice.
Yes,
Crisis in the Congo,
yes,
Uncovering the Truth. You'll find out that the weapons that were used to invade the Congo came from the United States. Bill Clinton was the one who armed or gave weapons not only to the Ugandan army, but also to the Rwandan army of Paul Kagame. So it was not the French. By the way, you heard about the what they call the Rwanda genocide of 1994. This Rwandan genocide of 1994 took place because Bill Clinton, the United States, gave missiles for Kagame, who shot down the plane that was carrying the president, the president, the elected president of Rwanda, of his own country. So he shot that plane down, and the president of Rwanda and the president of Burundi, who were in that plane, perished, so that he, Paul Kagame, could invade his own country from Uganda and take power by force. And that's what they did. But they did that with the backing of Bill Clinton, who gave them the weapons. Bill Clinton sent U.S. Forces, armed forces, trainers in Uganda to train Paul Kagame's soldiers before they invaded the Congo.
Wow.
Let's take another caller and make it brief, caller, a question or a comment so we can get more people in line. The line is 6789. You're on the air.
I'm going to take it to him because he's dealing with Uganda. This is something that's been burning in me for years and years and years, and I want him to answer this for me. Was Idi Amin from Uganda, was he a good leader or was he a rebel financed by the American government to destroy his people? Because I had so many stories about Idi Amin. I don't know what's real and I don't know what's fiction with him. So I would wonder if the professor could clear up some misconceptions for me about Idi Amin.
Okay, go ahead. All right, thank you, brother.
The best way for me to explain Idi Amin to you is to give you Saddam Hussein and to give you who is the president of Panama who was arrested, Noriega. So if you know about the story about Noriega, if you know the story about Saddam Hussein, then you know the story about Idi Amin, because he was the man. The soldier, actually, Idi Amin fought in the British Army during World War II. So Idi Amin was a person until he started acting independent like Noriega tried, like Saddam Hussein tried. And you know what happened to them. So when Idi Amin now wanted to act like, you know, he was somebody, and then he got a British citizen to carry him on, what they call that, on the shoulders, like the black people in his ancestors used to carry white folks when they went to Africa. So they had enough with him. So that's why they got rid of him. But yes, you're right. He used to be their man, just like Noriega was, just like Saddam Hussein was, before they turned against him. I think that's the best way to define Idi Amin to you.
Yeah, I agree. Let me take one more caller, and then we'll start. Let me take another one. And the sister, I hear you on the line. I'll let you take 5217. 5217, make it brief, please.
Yes, how you doing? What I'd like to say is that I'd like to take it back to where he was talking about the reasons why, about how they tell Africans they come over to stay away from black people. And as I was a kid, I remember I was being told that Africans didn't like us, you know, and stay away from them. And like he said, that was a part of conquer and divide because they don't want us to know the real history out of Africa, what really happened. So they try to keep us divided. And that's what's been on my mind tonight, listening to everything. That's what it all boils down to. They just don't want us to know where we come from and how powerful we really was and how we were the chosen ones because life came from Africa, started in Africa. That's my comment.
All right. Appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you.
Can I say something?
Yes. 8848, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Mamie, for being in the show. I've learned so much from you. Being an African, I'm curious about, because my birth was in Cuba, and you know how Fidel Castro is the dictator of my country, Cuba. I would like to find out what is the correlation between Fidel Castro and Africa. Is it for the good, or is it for conquering towards the bad?
Thank you, sister. You just took us from Africa to the United States to Cuba, which is also a good connection because we are all one people. Those African people were taken all over the place, and Cuba is one of them. You want to know about the correlations between Fidel Castro and Africa. Now, to know about Fidel Castro and Africa, you need to go back to what the Europeans used to call the Cold War. The Cold War means that there was a war that was not, they were not firing nuclear weapons. They were not firing, you know, machine guns or bombs, but they were trying to convince them control the minds of the people. That's why they call it Cold War. So they were also fighting for Africa, with Russia being the master of Cuba, and some of the countries in Africa, with the United States and Western Europe being their masters, especially the United States. So they were trying to conquer Africa. Now, Angola, which is the country south of the Congo where I was born, Angola, they wanted to become communist or socialist. In other words, they wanted to deal with Russia. Now, Russia could not send their own soldiers to Africa, because that would mean that the United States would send his soldiers to Africa too. So therefore, the Russians asked Fidel Castro to send his soldiers to Africa to help Angola. And so the Cuban soldiers were fighting in Angola so that Angola becomes a socialist country that is a client of Russia. And the United States went to the Congo after they assassinated the first prime minister of my country, the Congo, whose name is Patrice Lumumba. Then what they did was they got a guy by the name of Mobutu, and they gave him weapons now for him to be the counterweight of the Angolan, of the Cuban forces in Angola. And so Mobutu in the Congo was trying to do the bidding of the United States, while the Cubans in Angola were doing the beatings of Russia. So that is the correlation that you ask, or the relationship you ask, between Fidel Castro and Africa. And you know, for a long time, he Actually, one time he was the leader of what is called the non-aligned countries, but that's a long, complicated history, political, international history. But that is the extent to which I know the role that Cuba played in Africa was in terms of Angola, and also he tried to help Mozambique, which was also another country that was trying to become independent and fight off the Portuguese, because Portugal was the colonial master of those two countries. That's the extent of what I know, the relationship of Cuba to Africa. Now, and you added something that is very interesting. Is it for the good or was it for the bad? Now, that, my sister, is a very tough question, but it's a question that will require a long answer. Why? Because if you don't like the United States, then you say what Fidel Castro was doing in Angola was all right, right? Because he was trying to help the Angolans to become socialist like Russia. Now, if you like the United States, you're going to say, well, he wasn't doing a good thing because he was trying to make Angolans become socialist or communist or become client states of Russia. So therefore, which side do you want to be? I will leave that to you. Personally, for me, I am an African. I am a Pan-Africanist. In other words, I look out for the interest of Africa and the African people all over the world. If that thing does not benefit my people, then I will say it's not good. And if it benefits my people, then I'll say it is good, because every people first look after their welfare, they look after their people, make sure that their people are taken care of before anybody else. Unfortunately, most of us as an African people, we don't do that. You know, we are corrupt, we are bought off, we are brainwashed to help other people before we help our own people. But that's a question, my sister, that you need to answer, whether what side of the equation you are in terms of Castro and Africa. Thank you.
Yeah. We're at the top of the hour, everybody. We're going to hold for a little bit. But, Professor, give us information how we can be involved with what you're doing, contact numbers, how we can join forces in getting some of this word out. So I'll give you this last 2 minutes to tell us how we can get in touch with you and how we can help your cause, or our cause, because our cause is what.
Thank you. Yes, Brother Drybones, thank you. Thank you so very much first for you to invite me on the show. I remember when we met in Florida, I said that our ancestors always said that nothing happens by chance. So that sat with you for us to study our history is what leading us to what we did today. So hopefully some of our people have learned something. In terms of the Congo, again, I said, everybody, please go on YouTube and view that video, Crisis in the Congo, Uncovering the Truth. And after you've done that, please, you can contact us. You can contact me through the email Congo Coalition, one word, CongoCoalition@hotmail.com. If you contact me, I'll send you the information. I'll email you and tell you what actions we are taking and what we are doing, because we are preparing to write to the congressmen, to the United Nations, and we have been trying to expose Bill Clinton and about what he did to the Congo, and we are very happy that at least for once he did not go to Rwanda for the so-called 20th commemoration of the Rwandan genocide, because we have exposed Bill Clinton that he's the one that actually supported the invasion and funded Paul Kagame for him to kill Habyarimana and then to invade the Congo. And then so, and then he lied to the American people that he didn't know. But he knew because he was behind it. So because we've been exposing all this evidence, and then he didn't go to Rwanda this time. So please email us at congocoalition@hotmail.com. congocoalition@hotmail.com. And, of course, you have my brother, Dry Bones, who can also give you that if you forget the email. And now, as far as Sheikh Kanta Diop and African history, our sister Rose Blossom in Fort Lauderdale had put together a whole class that I went there and taught for the entire weekend. So anybody, any group of African people, wherever you are, in the United States or Canada, you want to put together a group like that, you speak to Brother Drybones. He will probably refer you to Sister Rose, who can tell you how she did it. And we will come to share the knowledge that our ancestors left for us with you. Again, Brother Drybones,
yes.
I want to thank you. Thank you, audience, for this time we spent together. Let us keep learning. Let us keep gaining
yes.
knowledge. And
yes.
Let us keep loving our own selves first before we love anybody
yes.
else. Thank you.
Well, I want you to know that anytime you want to come on here with any breaking news, you just contact me and you will have the floor at any time. So I appreciate the time you gave. We will be in contact. We will keep in touch and we will stay connected. For all of you, you heard the message tonight. I see many of you still listening. Y'all take the time and call and get involved. That's what it's all about, everybody. Getting involved. I told you one time before, it's not about being speculative. It's about being operative. You need to operate in all this knowledge that we have learned, and you will see how it will grow. We may be behind the eight ball, but guess what? Sometimes the eight ball gets scratched. So we need everybody to stay focused, do what you can, and things will come our way. First thing, you have to acknowledge that you want to get involved, and then acknowledge that, hey, I do not know everything, and this is the type of shows that can teach us some things. So, Professor, again, thank you. I appreciate you. And everybody, you heard the message. Get involved. He gave you the website. Call me at drybones7@hotmail.com or go to www.drybonesconnection.com. You can see the video that he was speaking of. And we will be on next Monday. So look for us next Monday. And we appreciate you all. Thank you so much.